from 89.3 KPCC. This is Take Two. I'm Amy Martinez. Thanks for being with us. Yeah, as expected, after hitting another record of coronavirus infections on Monday, the state extended the stay-at-home order for much of California, including us here in Los Angeles and the surrounding counties. It's going to last an additional 3 weeks, meaning restrictions will continue for most activities. You know, the pandemic has really wreaked havoc on all aspects of our lives, hitting our most vulnerable populations the hardest. Homelessness was up in LA County even before the pandemic hit, with more than 66,000 people living on the streets or in shelters, and it's poised to get a lot worse. KPCC reporter Aaron Schrank joins us to talk about the year that was and what's next. Now, Aaron, it's been difficult for many unhoused Angelenos, and the agency's tasked with assisting them. What's happened to Southern California's homelessness crisis amid this pandemic?
Right. This is a region that obviously has been facing a serious housing crisis and homelessness crisis before the pandemic. But the events of the past 10 months have deepened and worsened that crisis. Let me take you back for a moment, A, to just before the pandemic, to Governor Gavin Newsom's State of the State address back in February, which you might remember was dedicated entirely to the subject of homelessness. Here's what the governor promised then.
I don't think homelessness can be solved. I know that homelessness can be solved. This is our cause. It's our calling. Let's all rise to the challenge and make California stand up as an exemplar of what true courage and compassion can achieve.
And just 1 month after he said that, Newsom was announcing a statewide lockdown because of the coronavirus. And while many of us were sheltering in our homes and apartments, the tens of thousands of people living in the streets or in shelters were unable to do so. So instead, they really watched their social safety net disappear to some degree. Many homeless services providers stopped providing services. Crowded shelters were seen as a transmission risk, so many had to be thinned out. Some shelters closed, as did many charities and churches and the public places that many homeless men and women rely on to use the toilet, to charge a phone, or to take a shower. These places were all not available, so they really disrupted people's daily survival routines. As of about a week ago, we've had more than 623,000 positive corona cases in LA County, and more than 3,000 cases among the unhoused community, to put things in perspective. And of course, the pandemic has also put thousands more people, as you mentioned, at risk for eviction and potentially homelessness.
Yeah, just about the worst year ever. Aaron, so what are some of the main ways local and state officials have responded?
Yeah, so interestingly, because of the urgency of the situation, it's really led to local and state leaders looking for new approaches to homelessness and actually the funding and political will being there for some of those new approaches to happen. Probably the best example of this locally would be Project Room Key. Back in April, the state and county announced this program, which here in LA County was supposed to move 15,000 people out of crowded shelters or tent encampments and into vacant hotel rooms. This was focused, as you might remember, on people who were over 65 or who had underlying medical conditions, people who might be susceptible to the virus.
So it's been 8 months since Project Room Key began. How's it been going? Is it successful?
Well, on one hand, the city and county did quickly move thousands of people into hotel rooms during a pandemic, but the program fell well short of its original goals. As I said, it was supposed to get 15,000 people, about a quarter of LA County's homeless population, indoors. But officials struggled to get enough hotels to participate in that program. They ultimately have leased just 2,600 hotel rooms and have housed several thousand people, just a fraction of its goal. This is a $100 million program that was funded mostly through federal reimbursements from the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Officials haven't been able to rely on that funding source. They've had to submit requests every 30 days to reauthorize that reimbursement. So it was announced some months back that the Project Room Key program would be winding down earlier next year. But then earlier this month, FEMA announced it will permanently reimburse the system of hotel leasing during the pandemic. So Project Room Key may have a bit of a lifeline and be able to continue functioning here longer. At the same time, local leaders are now pushing what they're calling Project Home Key. This is a more than $800 million state grant program relying mostly on federal coronavirus relief dollars. It allows cities and counties to not just lease, but to actually purchase struggling hotels and convert them into permanent supportive housing for the homeless. There's about 40 Project Home Key sites in the works right now around the region, and they're expected to provide 2,000 new homeless beds within just a couple of months, a few months. And so at least one of these is already open and the rest are supposed to be open soon.
So Aaron, what kind of overall progress did LA make toward housing its unhoused population in 2020? I mean, you got the shelter system, newer emergency shelters, Project Room Key, Project Home Key, and I know we're building new housing. So is all of this having an impact?
Yeah, it's an important question. I mean, I guess what I would say is that even with all this recent pressure and these new efforts to get people into shelter faster, we simply are not creating beds fast enough here in Los Angeles County to address the growing problem that we have. Thousands of people are housed through the system every year, this year included. But to put things in perspective, over the last year, on average, 207 people every day were able to exit from homelessness, either by getting public services or, you know, through their own means. That's according to Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority. But at the same time, each day, 227 people become homeless. So even as people are getting housed, the unhoused population continues to grow. Gary Painter is the director of the Homelessness Policy Research Institute at USC, and he spoke to me recently about this.
What we've experienced over the last decade in LA County is really tragic. We have more people entering homelessness every year than we've ever had in the previous year. And that despite the fact that we're building and building and housing more and more than we ever have before, we simply haven't kept up with the economic factors that have driven people into homelessness.
And now that the homelessness crisis has been overlaid with a public health crisis and economic crisis, Aaron, I can only imagine we're probably going to see a lot more people driven into homelessness.
Yeah. We are at the height of the pandemic right now, and homelessness is certainly about to get worse. You've got a ton of people who are facing eviction at the end of January, unless state or local leaders act to extend eviction protections. Those eviction protections from the state have been in place since March, basically barring evictions if renters have financial hardship due to COVID-19, or at least delaying those evictions to February 1st of next year. LA County has its own ban, which also expires on January 31st. So we're facing a huge eviction cliff in about a month. A recent UCLA study found that about 36,000 more households could end up evicted and homeless in LA County because of this pandemic. State lawmakers have introduced a bill that would extend eviction protections throughout next year. Local leaders could also do something themselves. But until then, you've got a lot of anxiety from people who can't make rent payments and will still be expected to make those payments once the moratorium does end. So yeah, the looming evictions crisis is sure to make this homelessness problem an even larger and more complicated issue here in Southern California.
That's housing and homelessness reporter Aaron Schrank. Aaron, thanks a lot.
Nice talking with you. Happy New Year.
When it comes to the pandemic, there is light at the end of the tunnel, but right now we know it's pretty hard to see. The last 9 months have been really, really hard, especially for those who've become ill with COVID-19 or have had to care for someone who did. So to understand how the coronavirus has affected people, we reached out to Take Two listeners who've had it. Yesterday, we heard from 61-year-old Tanya McMillan, a childcare worker from Bellflower who got very sick this summer. Next up is Christian Galarreta. He's a 40-year-old insurance underwriter from Anaheim. Christian tested positive for COVID-19 on December 12th. Here's his story.
It's been a struggle ever since I've had the first symptoms. And even though I still have a lot of the body aches, they're not as intense as they were previously. My brother-in-law had just passed away from complications with COVID-19, and they asked the family if they wanted to go over there and just basically pay your last respects to the body. So we were in that environment. And while we did take all of the proper precautions, we wore masks, we consistently sanitized our hands, we, you know, try not to touch our face as much as possible. But regardless of all that, we were still in that environment. So that was lingering in my mind as well while I was feeling those symptoms of fatigue and the raspiness in my throat. It was overwhelming, and it was overwhelming in a very horrible way. You know, living through what we had just lived through with my brother-in-law and knowing that I got that same virus, it was pretty scary and didn't really know how it was going to impact me. As time went on, I started reading a lot of other articles online saying that nobody really knows what the long-term effects of COVID-19 on an individual are going to be. So a lot of questions started coming up. How is this potentially going to affect me in the long term? Is my body going to go through some organ damage, or I don't know. So that's kind of lingering in the back of my mind as well. And if anybody's ever been through a flu, just think of that and how unpleasant that is. But maybe multiply it by a couple times extra, because I've had the flu before and I could honestly say that this was much worse. You know, don't spread it. If you're okay with getting the vaccine, please get the vaccine. And this is very real.
That was listener Christian Galarreta from Anaheim. Back now with more Take 2 on 89.3 KPCC and streaming on the KPCC app. I'm Amy Martinez. The pandemic is forcing many students to change their college plans, or in some cases, to cancel them completely. Reporter Jill Replegel covers pathways to higher education for us here at KPCC, and she's here to talk about some of the trends we're seeing and how the pandemic has altered the road to college. Jill, welcome back.
Thanks. Hello, A.
Now, first off, tell us more about how the pandemic is affecting students' college plans.
Yeah, nationwide, there was a nearly 22% drop in the number of high school students who graduated last spring and went immediately to college. That's a big drop, and that's according to a report that came out just last week. And that drop was even higher among low-income students, whose families are also the most likely to be hard hit by the pandemic. Another indicator, applications for financial aid among high school seniors are also way down compared to this time last year. And that's an indication that fewer seniors are planning to go to college. And statistics show that students who don't enroll in college right out of high school are less likely to enroll at all. So not great signs at all, especially considering it's even harder, you know, than ever to earn a living wage without a college degree.
Yeah, absolutely. And now, as we've heard, with a vaccine now out, we're going to start to see the beginning of the end. But, it, you know, still there'll be some time before things are back to some semblance of normal. So what's being done to try and keep high school students on track to go to college?
Yeah, there are statewide groups that have been running constant webinars on things like how to apply for financial aid. And high school counselors and administrators are really working hard to reach students and keep them on track any way they can, trying all kinds of new things like TikTok videos and Instagram stories, and then doing some kind of real old school door knocking. I heard about one principal in an LAUSD school who would get the lists from college counselors of seniors who hadn't yet completed their college application and drive around and knock on doors in the afternoon and say, you know, what's going on? Let's get this finished.
So is there any good news when it comes to college enrollment?
There is some good news. You know, while we have seen big drops in enrollment at community college, we haven't seen those same big drops in enrollment at four-year universities like the University of California system. I should say, you know, this is for this year. That could change next fall. But another thing that's been kind of good news is high school counselors have found some ways that have been almost easier during the pandemic to engage parents in college prep work. So, for example, attending a financial aid workshop. And that's because parents can join from home. You know, they don't have to make the time to travel to their son or daughter's high school, maybe on a weekend or evening. So offering parents and students more opportunities to engage remotely with the college planning process is probably something that will continue after the pandemic.
And hearing that about community colleges for me, Jill, that breaks my heart. I went to four community colleges. I'm a proud community college kid, so that is really, really just a bummer for me to hear. What about for those students who have dropped or delayed their college plans? What's the hope that they'll return once things get back to normal?
Yeah. It's important to remember that we're still early in this recession. Now, during the Great Recession in 2008 and 2009, there was a lag time before colleges saw students start to go back to school. But it's also possible that if the economy picks back up quickly, people are going to want and need really to get back to work quickly as possible rather than pursue education. And we did see that happen at the end of the Great Recession as well. So it's definitely possible that college enrollment, especially for adults, will not return to pre-pandemic levels. But then, you know, one wild card is what happens with education and economic recovery policies that the state government might put into place and that the new Biden administration might put into place. And that could really affect whether students decide to pursue higher education.
Now, switching gears a bit, I heard that the pandemic has really changed the whole process of applying to college. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest change is that many colleges and universities dropped standardized test scores as a requirement for admission. And that's mostly because a lot of test centers have been closed or had their hours reduced because of the pandemic, and many students just haven't been able to take those tests. And some colleges said, you know, we're not even going to look at your ACT or your SAT scores for admission purposes. Others said, if you were able to take the test and want to submit those scores, we'll take them into consideration. But if you don't, you won't be penalized. And as I reported earlier this year, that's making other aspects of applying, like those personal essays, even more important. And I think it's important to note that getting rid of standardized tests as a major factor in college admissions is something that equity-minded reformers have been pushing for a long time. They say the tests are inherently racist, that they give undue advantage, especially to people who have access to things like private test prep. And, you know, after the pandemic, colleges may just start again to require standardized tests for admission, but it's also possible that schools, and especially the University of California system, just do away with standardized tests completely.
Finally, Jill, can you give us a little preview of some of the things you'll be looking into in the new year?
Yeah, as I said before, you know, in past recessions, there's tended to be an uptick in adults going back to school, either to start a new career or to get further training. So I'll be paying special attention to this next year, especially. You know, what have we learned from the pandemic about which jobs are most vulnerable? What are the jobs of the future? And what education and training options are available for adults looking for more stable, better paying jobs?
KPCC reporter Jill Replegal covers pathways to higher education. Jill, as always, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
This week, we've been hearing from listeners who've contracted COVID-19 to get a sense of how it affects people differently, both physically and emotionally. Up next is 25-year-old Samantha Cavastani, a personal assistant in Hollywood. She tested positive for the coronavirus on December 5th. Here is her story.
I was getting tested as a precaution, and honestly, I was assuming that it would be negative. I did not show any symptoms at the time, so I was surprised when my result came back positive 2 days later. After I had informed everyone that I had been in contact with that I tested positive, they all then got tested. But because everyone I had seen was negative, I'm not really sure where I got it from. I started to feel symptoms shortly after I began isolating in my room, a day or so later. I felt really tired. I was sneezing and congested. I had a little cough. Fortunately, my temperature stayed pretty normal. A couple of days after that, I lost my taste and smell, which was really disorienting to me. To treat my sickness, I slept a lot. I was going to bed at like 7 p.m. some nights. I took a lot of vitamin C and D, and also some zinc. I felt pretty lucky because my parents were taking really good care of me and leaving meals by my door. And, you know, again, I was so fortunate that it was a pretty mild case, but my biggest concern was absolutely worrying about the people that I had come in contact with. It was really frightening, and it felt like I had potentially wounded so many people unknowingly. And another concern I have is that there's a lot of shame attached to this, and it feels problematic. You know, I was being as safe as I thought I could. I always see people outside from a good distance, even though seeing friends is so rare for me. And I always wear a mask and sanitize my hands and wash my hands. I was getting a lot of questions from my employer about who could have given it to me and what the details of each person I had seen were. And it felt sort of like a distraction from the real problem, which was that I had it and I had been in contact with this person. I had told everyone I had seen that I had it, and that really felt like the most I can do.
That was Samantha Cavastani, a 25-year-old personal assistant from the Los Feliz area of Los Angeles. Back now with more Take 2 on 89.3 KPCC and KPCC.org. I'm E. Martinez. Now let's unwind with some music. Joining us to discuss their picks for the best tunes of 2020 are my favorite musical guides. They're my musical soulmates, Oliver Wang and Morgan Rhodes. Oliver is a music writer. Morgan is a music supervisor. And together they co-host the podcast Heat Rocks. All right, you two. The assignment was to bring us three tracks, each of you, for the best of the year. So, Morgan, let's start with your first track. It's titled Better Than I Imagined.
Scrambled to get a flight. I lost my phone and I'm calling you from the hotel.
All right, Morgan, tell us about who we are listening to and why did you choose this?
They are Robert Glasper, Michelle Ndegeo Cello, and Her. And of course, the song is called Better Than I Imagined. And I can't tell you how many times I've played this song this year. It was a surprise release. At least it was a surprise to me. In August, and since then I've had it on super heavy rotation. It's going to be included in Robert Glasper's forthcoming album, Black Radio 3. Just a few things about personnel. Robert Glasper is a multi-talented piano virtuoso, and his work in jazz has really helped to transform the genre and shape the sound of it for this generation. And then, of course, we have Michelle Ndegeo Cello, who's a bass god, and she's a singer-songwriter on this piece and an icon. And then, of course, last but certainly not least, Gabriella Wilson, also known as Her, who has had an amazing 2020 with star turns, appearances, features, ciphers. And between the three of them, there are 24 or so Grammy nominations, including for this song.
And I'll call again. Maybe you'll answer.
All right, Oliver, your first pick is by an artist that goes by Uno Stereo. Tell us about Uno Stereo.
It's the artist name for a Melbourne, Australia-based producer named Nick Martin. And as the song title is A Vibe Called Quest, and it is his ode to A Tribe Called Quest. So I have to confess here, I think the fact that they named the song A Vibe Called Quest was, of course, very strategic and deliberate to get people like me who are Tribe fans to pay attention, because I did not know about this artist before. I probably would never have paid it any mind if not for the name. And the funny thing is I love this song. I don't feel like it really reminds me that much of a Tribe Called Quest style of production, but it doesn't really matter because regardless, I do dig the vibe, pun very much intended. There was a point at which I put this song on repeat and for basically half a day just let it loop in the background while I was working. And because I share a Spotify account with my teenage daughter, she uses the app far more than I do, but our collective number one song of 2020 ended up being A Vibe Called Quest simply because I played it so much, even though the rest of like the top 20 list are all of my daughter's songs. So she's a little bit annoyed at me that it's not one of her favorite songs that ended up topping our joint list.
Isn't that though part of any art sometimes, Oliver, is that something about the title, the way it looks or the way it's being presented, if it gives you an opportunity to click on it, play, hear it, that, you know, it's a door opening. So, and you heard a wonderful song that maybe you wouldn't have heard otherwise.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, Morgan, moving on to number two for you, and it's by Leanne LaHava. So tell us who she is as you tee up her song, Please Don't Make Me Cry.
She's a British soul singer. Most of us came to know her from her debut, Is Your Love Big Enough, which was followed by her sophomore project, Blood. And this album came out this year, 5 years after the last one. And this one is what catharsis sounds like.
History has secrets to keep. This mystery is barely skin deep. You won't find another dream if you don't get no sleep. If we're gonna make this love, just read what's written above. Oh,
she took an elevator and took us with her on that note.
100%. The first line of this song is Stay For Me, My Heart On Your Sleeve, which I think hints at what this album is. It's very personal, very full of self-awareness, introspection. It's an album about changes. It's an album about moving on and moving forward. And it just feels so much more intentional and more thoughtful than previous albums. And she's got that really pretty vibrato of hers. And together with the soft guitar work, it makes something that's really warm. And it just brings you in. I mean, it really just brings you in. This is one of my favorite albums of the year. The album is 12 tracks long. And believe me, I listen to all 12. on a regular basis, but Please Don't Make Me Cry is the one that I kept coming back to.
All right, 2020 may not have been a great year, but it did have some great songs. We're hearing some of them with Morgan Rhodes and Oliver Wang. Now, Oliver, your second song really feels like it came out straight out of the pandemic. When all of this is over, I'ma grab you by the hand, kiss you with your mask off, and make a bunch of travel plans. Till then, I'ma stay put, lighting up my eighth wood, loading up on baked goods, hope you're keeping safe, love. All of this is over. The first thing I'ma do, yeah, I'ma come on over and never leave your room. When all of this is over, meet me outside, baby.
Well, this song is called Outside. It's by LA's own Dumbfounded, featuring on the vocals there, Sadika. By and large, I did not want my pop culture in 2020 to remind me that we were living through a global pandemic, because it's not like I forgot that we were at any point. And despite that, the first time I heard this song outside from Dumbfounded, I did find myself being genuinely caught up in its sentiment about waiting out the days on lockdown until we can all go outside again and to see one another. And I'm sure, like many people around the world, it's what we all yearn for. I guess somewhere there's a light at the end of the tunnel, but that still feels like a pinpoint. And so songs like this kind of remind me to keep staring off into that distance with some bit of hope, I suppose.
Yeah, and Oliver, one of the great things, at least for me, to look forward to is how some of the artists that we love and admire are going to use everything that has happened to the world in the last 9 months to create art, to make us happy in 2021 and beyond.
I am looking forward to the ways in which how we process what will end up being at least a year, you know, spent in this situation. How is this going to come out creatively? And I mean, I am looking forward to those efforts down the road.
All right, Morgan, your last pick is a song called Gently by Radiant Children. Let's listen and then come back and talk about it. To know what you should do with my empathy is so intrusive to you. I'm sorry that I see straight through you. My self-care been on A1. Morgan, tell us about Gently by Radiant Children.
Yes. Track number 6 from the album, There's Only Being Yourself. And why do I know the track number? Because I played it a lot, a lot. Their trio that burst onto the scene on the strength of their first album, Tryin', and of a key placement on a show called Insecure. They're now part of the conversation. They're a trio that met. Two of the members were singing in a wedding covers band and decided to do something different. Lucky us. I love their sound, which to me really presents as sort of Hiatus Coyote meets Erykah Badu meets the internet.
All right, Oliver, we're going to end on your other pick. This is Sam Henshaw, Thoughts and Prayers.
Bow my head, said my prayers. I'm the good one, ain't I? Wash my hands of all my sins. I'm the good guy, ain't I? If everyone were like me, could there be the change I'd like to see? Ain't I good? Ain't I right?
Oliver, tell us why you picked this song.
It's actually less about the song, though I think the song is beautiful and sublime, but really more about the artist. I first discovered Sam Henshaw, who is a British-based soul artist, I think probably in 2018 or 2019, and was just instantly smitten by his voice, about his musical choices, And I've been very eagerly awaiting a proper studio album from him ever since then. He's put out a bunch of different singles, great songs, but not an album yet. And Morgan and I were recently chatting about the year in music on our podcast. And I was saying how there's a few artists who did not put out new music, or at least not in the form of an album in 2020, that hopefully will next year. And that includes kind of iconic giants like Frank Ocean and Kendrick Lamar. But I'm equally excited to see what an up-and-comer like Henshaw will do in the near future. And so for me, this song is a bit of a placeholder, I suppose an amuse-bouche to tide things over until he delivers a main course for us, hopefully sometime in the new year.
Oliver Wang and Morgan Rhodes, they are the starter, the meal, and the dessert of all music, and they co-host the podcast Heat Rocks. Oliver, Morgan, thanks a lot.
Thank you so much. Good to see you again, Oliver.
Same here, Morgan. When all of this is over, the first thing I'ma do.